I'd like to start and welcome everybody back to another episode of Save for the Blind podcast. We have Carson Odegaard here with our normal co-host, Jeff Smith, and a familiar voice on the other side of the line, Mr. Terry Denman, president and CEO of Mojo. And Mr. Terry was on episode 23 way back when of Save for the Blind. We're almost in 100 episodes now, so way back when we were talking everything Mojo about Terry, how we kind of got into a partnership with CWA, and we're going to do a little bit of that this time, but we're going to definitely focus on some of the new products that are coming out this year and why they're coming out and why folks should be using them. So Terry, wanted to welcome you back to another episode of Save for the Blind.
Very glad to be here. Always like to communicate with your organization. It's a great organization.
Good. Well, we appreciate that. So I just want to jump right in. I think every California waterfowler knows that there's been a big shift in the last, I'll call it 5 to 8 years with motion decoys, especially decoys that mimic a spinning wing. And the rebirth of the blade has been crucial, I think, to a lot of people's success. And now Mojo has come out with their own, and I believe it's coming out this year. I just on your website and said coming soon. So wanted to give you a little time to explain the thought process behind that and when exactly it's coming out and folks can see that in the field.
Sure. It is coming out this year. It was scheduled to be out earlier in the year, but we've been having the trade war issues going on, and it put a pretty good delay in being able to ship goods into the United States. So it just made a delay in it, but it should be here within weeks. In fact, I think some of them are going to some of the bigger box stores now. We ship direct to them. They don't come through our warehouse. We ship direct to them. And so some, they may have them now. I don't know. I didn't check that before this, but they'll be out within weeks. And, I'm not sure you're familiar with this. But, on y'all's 80th anniversary banquet we had, we donated production unit number one for auction up there. So,
me and Jeff were there Saturday and we saw it.
Saturday. Yeah.
So we were glad to do that. But anyway, they would have been out probably in the June, July timeframe had not been for all the trade war things going on, but they'll be out well before season. They may not be a good supply before the early till season, but they certainly will be before what we call the pig duck season. And so they hear.
Yeah, I mean, what did you guys see when you guys were developing that, and are other states, guys starting to use those? It's kind of one of those things where it looks like a crazy apparatus, but it's very, very successful. At least out here it is, it seems to be. And like Carson mentioned, a lot of guys are using them, and which, it's been out for, 30-something years or something like that. So it's been around for a while, but still very effective.
The big blade is not well known, we find out, probably outside of California. Maybe some hunters that hunt in California, hunt some other states, they may know about it. But other than that, we don't find any people that know about it, and they kind of skeptical of it. But there are some locations, mostly big water. The main one would be Real Foot Lake. Y'all are probably familiar with Real Foot Lake. Yeah. It's a huge, huge, huge lake. Right against the Mississippi River in Tennessee. In fact, it was caused by an earthquake there in Tennessee. And they weren't on to the big blade, but they're on to bigger wings. So the coefficient is basically the same thing. So they taken a Mojo Mallard, which is the most powerful spinning wing decoy that I know of. They taken that and they taken the wings off of it, and they making core class wings that are twice that big, because you got to have that much motor to do that. In fact, I know one guy there that we've been knowing him for many, many years. He just converted a Mojo Mallard to a big 12-volt motor. He got a huge wing on it, and they say it makes a noticeable difference. So obviously, the big blade will work everywhere. We'll get a lot of comments, well, it won't work on our ducks, but they all the same ducks. They're no right. They're no our ducks. They may be in a different state of pressure, you know, and not, not respond to things as much, but they're the same ducks everywhere you go. So they doing well at, last year, they did well on the Real Foot Lake with the big, big wings. So we got the big blade, but it's just going to be an educational process. But you know what happens? Somebody take it and they'll have good luck with it. We actually had, I think 50 of them last year. We just run 50 prototypes and we had them scattered around here, there, everywhere. We got mixed results. Part of it is people that told us they were going to use them didn't believe in them and didn't use them, you know. But our good friend, Ramsey Russell, I know y'all know Ramsey, you know. In fact, Ramsey's the one that got me to build this product. He spent about 10 days up in the Sac Valley and he found these people that, you know, made the very first ones and, you know, how that he dug into that pretty deep. And he came back from there telling me that, look, we need to make one of these, you know. So I checked onto it a little bit. I just didn't jump off the cliff at first, but I checked in a good bit and I said, okay, let's do that. It'll be an educational process, but a lot of the products that Mojo's made over the years have been an educational process because we try to, you know, get out in front as far as we can get out. And so, I think we'll sell all we can make this year. And cause we couldn't make that many because of the problems I told you about earlier. And, I think we'll sell all we got. I think we can sell them all in California. And,
I guarantee you, you can.
But we'll scatter them around the country and, you know, kind of get things going every which way. And once people learn how to hunt with them, which, I'll tell you the truth. I don't know how to hunt with them. You know, we played with them, but, you know, all the people that know how to hunt with them are in the state of California. But, you know, I've had people tell me that they took, you know, the prototypes we had and did well with them. So once people learn how to hunt with them and they have success, then it'll kind of go like wildfire. You can't believe what people thought about the very first spinning wing decoy that showed up in Louisiana and I was one of them, and we started making them. And I just took one and went to my farm and put it out. And I've told this story, and y'all might have heard it before, but I'll tell it kind of quickly. But my duck field on our farm is probably a mile and a half from the closest public road, because it's the very back of our farm. You know, and so the point is that nobody's around that duck field. But when I put it out in the morning time, I can remember looking around to make sure nobody was looking at me. That's how stupid I felt for putting it out. And I started walking. I put it out and I turned it on. And you didn't have anything but a motor and a battery and a switch back then. I turned it on, started waving back to my blind because it wasn't quite shooting time yet. And I heard, I turned around, I bet 40 mallards was laying on top of that thing. I said, wait a minute. I think there's something to this thing, but just to look at it, it's not rational, you know, until you understand how it works. And then it becomes a lot more rational once you understand exactly how it works, you know, but, I think the big blade, it won't be that extreme because, you know, people do know that the flash will attract the decoys, you know, it's just a bigger flash. That's all it is a bigger flash.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember the first time I saw it, me and Jeff are in the same club in the Rice in California, and my blind sits on the opposite check of his, but another 300 yards down. And I was new to the Rice, and Jeff had been in the Rice and had blades out, and it was like I couldn't buy a duck. And he'd be like, "Oh, we're done with our limits." And I'm like, "What do you mean? Like, I'm looking at you guys, and all I see is big flash." So it's like, "All right, guess I got to go out and get one because." You know, we'd switch blinds and he'd do the same thing in the blind that I was in just because he had the flash. At least in our area and the folks that I know that use them, boy, does it make a difference.
It does. And, you know, there's a lot of conversation going on about pressure ducks. It'll flare pressure ducks. And it will because a duck gonna catch on to anything that's danger, you know. And,
yeah.
They get to where they flare off a call, they flare off of duck blinds, but they probably flare off the spinning wing more than anything because that's much more flash than a duck can make. A duck can't make anywhere close to that flash, near as big or near as continuous. And so I think they learn to recognize that that's not a real duck once they get close to it. And so a lot of people, you know, say, well, we don't use them then. And I preach against that, and I'm probably the wrong messenger for that because I make them, but really, it's, I'm not going to sell any more if you use them half the season and you don't use them the other half the season. But the reason you shouldn't do that is the highest and best use of a spinning wing decoy is and always has been long range attraction. But in the very beginning, they wanted to land right on top of it, so everybody thought of it as a finishing device. And it was a finishing device, but and it still is today and on unpressured ducks. But instead, if you don't use it, you give up your long-range attraction. So, you know, what we do is we just move it far. You know, I've hunted where I put it on the dry ground 75 yards behind me. And so a duck can see that flash or that strobe further than they can see anything else. Now, they can see, you know, movement much further than they can see steel optics. So I said about 3.5 times. I don't know who came up with that and how they came up with it, but I do know that they can see movement much, much greater than they can see steel optics. But they can see that flash even further than that. We had a crop duster tell us one time he could see one from 8 miles off.
Oh, geez.
And this is a human. You know, human's eyes ain't not anything close to what a duck's eyes are. So you know, they shouldn't give it up. They should just move it out of the way so the ducks don't flare off of it. And they keep the long-range attraction, and they lose the fact that it don't want to land that close to it.
Right.
You go to Canada where those ducks aren't pressured. Are they the same duck that's going to be down here later? It's not a different duck, you know. They land right on top of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we've all seen that happen. Now, like when you're producing like the blade, how long did it take with just a project to get one pretty much fully done? Was it like a year, 6 months? I mean, what's the process of that?
2 years.
2 years.
And it might not have been 2 years exactly, but we made sure we had those 50 prototypes that I mentioned a while ago where we could get them out and give them a try. You know, our standard procedure is not to put a product on the market until we've tried it and make sure we got what bugs out of it or, you know, whatever comes with a brand new product. And we wouldn't necessarily do that on every product, but if it's got a motor and a battery and a switch and floating in the water or anything like that, you know, we're going to try it out before we put it on the market. So we had prototypes that were pretty close to, maybe even identical to the production model. We had those during the duck season last year, but I don't think we had them at the beginning of the duck season. I think we had them a little later in the duck season. And so we started in June of last year, then it would have been a year. It would have been a year. We might have started before that. I can't remember. But it takes longer than one thinks, and especially if you don't put them on the market until you try them out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I've noticed, I mean, the price point's great. You know, people that are making those custom out here, no matter what the quality, it's pretty steep, you know, $400 to $600, depending on where you're buying them. So that was pretty much a barrier for a lot of people because, I mean, one blade at $600 is pretty steep.
Yeah, we bought a California model and looked it over, but it didn't have a lot of what we would call modern sophistication to it, and that's really all we added. We didn't change the blade up, but you know, we got a removable battery. You can remove the whole housing that drives it. It's got a bearing on the terminal end on the other end that makes it quiet. It is very, very quiet. If you've heard one run, it's very, very quiet.
Yes, it is.
We had one with us. We were doing a photo shoot for CWA highlighting some of the gear. And I think the one that was given to Scott Mueller, we brought that one out, and me and Jeff, being blade aficionados, were looking at the housing and turn it on, and definitely how quiet it was a big difference compared to the ones that we've run before.
Yeah, we put up a decibel meter, or whatever you call those, on it. And if you're out in front of it, you know, it'll produce about as much sound as a person talking like we are now. But if you get to the side of it and you're right on top of it, the meter won't always read it. So that's wind noise that it's making. And you know, you can't turn that big a blade without making a wind noise. You just can't. And, It's turning about 700 RPM, by the way. So it's turning, it's turning pretty fast, but it is quiet. I don't think the noise will ever flare a duck.
I will say Scott Mueller didn't let us borrow it during the season. He was pretty quiet himself.
We could have been great testers for that.
Yeah. He wanted it all for his own.
When you had it, you should have just kept it.
It was a bad idea.
After the season, I kept I'll test that blade out. He's like, no, I'm using it. And I was like, yeah, I'll test the blade out. You know, nothing. Got nothing.
How do you figure on the RPMs? Because myself and Jeff have talked about that. We've even seen one a person made that had a dial on it where you could slow the spinning down because they thought, oh, if it's slower, the ducks aren't used to seeing the slower versus fast. Do you think there's a too fast or a too slow when it comes to a blade in the flash?
I don't know about too fast. I can say a few words about that, but for a fact, it's too slow. And I've just been playing with that for the 25 years we've been in business, okay? And so I can't tell you exactly what the speed is, but and it does vary with the sky conditions and the material that the blade's made out of. Those are two biggest factors. But when it gets down below about 400 RPMs, it's not producing that strobe anymore. It's not producing that flash that the duck can see from so far. So it doesn't have that long range of traction, and it basically becomes a motion decoy. Now, you know, people call it a motion decoy anyway, but it's really not. It's not a motion. If it's a properly operating one, you shouldn't see hardly any motion. You know, the blade's turning fast enough, you don't see hardly any motion. But under 400 RPMs, you've lost your ability to long range attraction. Now, past that, I know that the faster you turn them, the more attracted ducks are to them. But we've only turned them up around 750 RPMs, and they're more attracted to that decoy than they are to the slower turning ones. And I think it was 2007 or 2008. We came up with that concept and said, okay, we need to build a duck with a much faster wings. And so I made a serious mistake right there. I said, well, to turn faster, I need a smaller wing. To turn a smaller wing, I need a smaller duck. So I made a teal, a green wing teal, spinning wing teal. It did okay, but people bought it for a teal. Nobody would buy it for a mallard. So I should have made a mallard that size and put that in. We called them super fast wings back then. And you see people other people that make these, you know, they get on to the speed of that wing, but I would keep my speed up. And, you know, they've been operated off of DC batteries. Well, this AA or lithium or whatever, they're all DC. And DC batteries, except for the lithiums, you know, they lose their speed as they lose their voltage because the DC motor turns proportional to the voltage that's fed to it. That's true on the lithium, too. It's just the lithium, you know, has a PC board in there, and it holds the It holds a regular voltage all the way to the end. You know, now you drill stops one time, you know. So if you've got a lithium battery, and that's a big advantage to lithium batteries, they're going to hold that speed right to the end. But any other kind of battery, seal lead acid, you know, nickel metal hayride, it doesn't matter. All those lose speed the minute you start running them. And you have to watch it real close and don't let your wings get down below some fast speed. And it's kind of hard to tell. It's kind of hard to tell. You just gonna have to watch it. But you need to keep your wing speed up to the point.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's like, you know, the size of as a duck hunter, and as I think all duck hunters do, you look at a product and you look at something that works, i.e. the blade, and it's like, what could you do to change it to make it better? It's like, how do you decide on a length of the blade? Like, why hasn't somebody made one that's just giant or maybe a smaller blade? Like, what's the, it seems like everybody tends to stick with whatever length you guys have about that length.
I saw some videos. In fact, Ramsey had some of those videos when he was out in California. I got a lot of information from Ramsey because he spent a lot of time talking to people that was in on the development of that. And there, one guy there had a huge blade. It's probably twice the size of ours. And he said it, it does better. I don't have any experience with that, so I can't speak to that issue, but he says it's better. But we kind of stuck with about what the popular ones were in California because we can turn that at the high speed with a reasonable battery, a reasonable motor, and a reasonable battery and reasonable battery life. And so that's basically how we did that.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I love the design that you guys came out with. Super simple and easy to use.
Yeah.
Is there any other products that you guys are releasing this year? New products?
Yes, quite a few. We've released a number of new products in the last 3 years. Well, about 3 years ago, I took it upon myself to do that, and that's why I spent a lot of my time doing that. And last year, we had a limited supply of a product we call the Mallard machine. Anybody familiar with the Mallard machine?
Yeah.
It's unbelievably popular. And we own the original Mallard machine, which was a trolling motor. Upside down, it was floating on three decoys. We didn't develop that. It was developed before there ever was a Mojo. We bought it from the guys that developed it, and we had that for a long time. And it would kill a duck. You know, I watch real carefully as I hunt at any kind of product, ours or anybody else's. I don't care what it is. And I see if I can tell myself that product helped me kill a duck, you know, and there's not very many of them out there that you can say that. Now, all put together, they do, but there's not many out there you say that product helped me kill a duck. But on that Mallard machine, the original one with the, you know, trolling motor upside down, the prop on top of it, it was balling the water out. So it was making a lot of water motion, and it was making the decoys that floated it, you know, dipped their head underwater. So that it was a good deal. It was an overkill. You had to be real careful how you use it, but it would kill a duck. So we quit making it because the sales just kind of dribbled down to about 500 a year. That don't work for us in our type of business. And so we took it off the market with the thought that we're going to make one and just punch the button and throw it in the water. Because that's basically what most hunters want to do. You know, they just want to punch a button, throw it in the water. And that Mallard machine, you had to put it out there and run a cord back to the blind and blah, 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 all that other stuff. So we thought we could do that in about a year or two. But if I go back and check the calendar, I'll probably figure out about 5 or 6 years for us to do that. And the difference in it was we couldn't float a battery in a decoy before they had lithium batteries. You know, lithium batteries are a lot lighter than our other ones. You know, most of our stuff runs on either double A's, the little stuff does, or on seal lead acid batteries. Seal lead acid batteries are great, you know, but they do lose voltage, you know, as you run them, and they're heavy. So we finally was able to build that product when we got lithium batteries. And so it's been really, really popular. And it's a motor driven propeller. Vertical and it's designed as a buoy. And you know, if a buoy, if you run over your boat, it just pops back up straight, you know, and the propeller makes it lean over and wobble. And so we got really, really, well worked out time ons and off. And we got off times on it, under a second. And what happens when you energize that motor, it makes the thing wobble over to the side. When you kill it, the buoy aspect of it makes it stand back straight up. So it's a duck butt just walking around in the water out there making waves. And I hadn't found anybody that said that he's scared of duck yet. So that's another thing we do. It's not enough just to attract it. You got to make sure it doesn't scare it. And so nobody said it's scared of duck yet. So it's about the most popular thing we made. And this year we came out with the Big Blade. And we came out with this dabber duck. I don't know if you've seen it or not, but it's a diving duck. It's got a weight on an arm below it. And when you energize it, instead of picking the arm up, the arm's heavy enough, it makes a duck dive underwater. And we worked that out. Took a long time to do that too. It's got six different motions it makes in the process of doing that. And then we made the front part of it hollow because it needed to be less buoyant than the back part. So it turns easy enough, you know, and then somehow quite by accident, we figured out it'll throw droplets of water up in the air. You know? And in both of those expos that we went to Delta Waterfowl in Oklahoma City, and then we went to DU in Memphis. Everybody came around with a retriever dog. That dog stopped and barked at that dapper, you know. So I think that's a good sign.
But that's awesome. I don't think I've seen the dabbler.
Well, I'm looking at the design right now. It looks cool.
Yeah, it's a really interesting decoy. It's very lifelike, you know.
Our 25-26 fall hunt program is in full swing, so don't miss out on the deadline for all October hunts. This will include one deer hunt and a lot of opening day waterfowl hunts. We do have some new properties in the works, so go to our website and see when those have been updated. So we have a lot of real cool upcoming news, so check out all of our social media posts when that stuff becomes available. So don't forget to apply. Third Saturday of every month is the deadline. We also have some pig hunts on there as well. Those are 2 weeks prior to each pig hunt. Those are extremely successful. People are seeing pigs on every single hunt for the last 2 months. Got to go look at those, calwaterfowl.org.
And then we got another special decoy for this year. This is our 25th anniversary, and so we said, let's build a 25th anniversary decoy. And so we did. We carved and molded a brand new high detail body, and but it's going to be in a mid range in price wise. Going to be a mid range decoy. We didn't want to make a $200 decoy, but we want everybody to have one of them. You know? It's got a 25-year seal on it, but the interesting thing about it, it's got a sequentially numbered leg band, and we did 10,000 of those, and we're going to do Lotteries. Now, we would have started Lotteries way back in April, you know, had we been able to get the product and get the product out to the dealers then. But we just now going to start that. So by every week, we're going to draw one of those numbers out. It's got a QR code inside the box. You buy one, you open it up, you scan that QR code, you're now in the lottery. Okay, if you don't scan the code, you're not in the lottery. And then every week we got a, you know, computer program, a randomizer computer program. It'll just pull a number out of those that have been scanned. And but you don't want to compete against 5,000 that's still on shelves or in the store, you know. So you're only competing against those that have been scanned. And we'll do a prize giveaway every week or two for the rest of the year.
Awesome. That's cool.
We call it the Silver Mallard. 25 years, Silver Mallard.
And those are in stores right now, or are you guys still waiting on the shipment?
No, they just hit the stores. They've been in there probably much as a week or two. So they are out there. So we'll start. We may have a draw next week if we can get all our stuff together. But if we don't, it won't be 2 weeks till we start having draws. And we may have more than one a week when we get started because we're late getting started. So,
yeah, they're available on the website right now. I'm looking at them right now. Yeah, $99. I mean, great price, honestly. Mm-hmm. Get yourself a mojo and getting drawings for the whole rest of the year.
It's a good hunting decoy now. It's a upgraded baby mojo. We've had a baby mojo for years, and we've sold thousands and thousands of those because it's a price point decoy. And it's the same decoy as that upgraded. It has it has some upgrades on the inside of it. We kind of copied some of the stuff that we did when we brought the Mojo Mallard out 2 years ago and some of that operating system. So it's a good hunting decoy. It's got a hanging loop on the top. If you'd rather put it in your lodge or trophy room or camp or whatever, then you can hang it from the ceiling.
That's awesome. Yeah, going back to your guys' your new Mallard machine, we had one at that photo shoot, and man, it churns a lot of water. I was shocked of how powerful it was. Pretty awesome, and looking forward to using that into the future. But it was extremely powerful, more powerful than I thought it was going to be. And just the wake of it is very noticeable throughout the entire pond.
Yeah, you know, the propeller's making waves, and then the decoy itself are making waves. So it's got a double action going on there. And then that butt, you know, it's a butt up decoy is what it is. That butt's moving around pretty aggressively. And so all of it's making a lot of motion on top of the water. And, you know, we were worried on that product about how deep a water you have to do it. And what about all the vegetation in the water? And I've hunted one quite a bit, and I've had one of them only get hung up. And when I walked out there to see what it was, it had sucked a stick, about an 8-inch stick down above it, basket we got on, because you got a good basket on it. Now, other than that, I haven't had any one of them get hung up in the vegetation. And in the depth of water, you know, it takes about 12 inches of water for that thing to do its thing. And I've hunted with it in less water than that. Ramsey and I were in Argentina a year ago and hunting a big marsh, great big huge marsh. And the water would be any kind of depth you can imagine out there. So it was kind of shallow that morning. So I told Ramsey, I said, well, put it out there, Ramsey. It'll do some. It won't do as much as it would do in deep water. It'll do some. So it did great that morning, but the point that impressed me is when the hunt was over with, we flew the drone and it had muddied the water up. You could have a big circle of muddy water where that thing kept bumping the bottom. Now that would depend upon, you know, what your bottom's made out of. But if your bottom's made out of relatively loose soil, you know, it'll muddy the water up for you. So it's the most popular product we got out right now.
Nice.
It's a lot of new products.
Yeah. A lot of good stuff on the market. Is there one that's your personal favorite? One of the new ones?
I don't think so, but if I did, it would have to be the Mallard machine. It'd have to be the Mallard machine. Now, I have not hunted with the Dabbler yet. I think the Dabbler is going to be very, very popular, but I have not hunted with one yet, so... If you ask me this time next year, I might have a different answer. But Mallard machine is pretty hard to beat.
Yeah, that's a pretty neat machine right there.
Yeah, I think a lot of the difference that when we were testing is, you know, a lot of the quote unquote motion decoys nowadays are spraying water, which is a completely different motion than that Mallard machine put out, where it's pushing water out from a motor underneath the water. It's just a different look to it when that water's moving than just like almost ripples on the water. And it just feels like you can move more water. It looks more realistic throughout a spread than just one spot.
Yeah, you know, we had that same product that sprays the water up on the tail. A guy from Missouri, I think, bought it to us years ago, and we kept it on the market for about 2 or 3 years. It wasn't very popular then for some reason, and I didn't like it, so we actually took it off the market when we developed other things. Now, I'm not criticizing anybody else's product. I don't do that. And they've killed a lot of ducks over those things, but they're not as natural as, say, this Mallard machine would be. They don't look as natural, but I think they attract the ducks' attention from a distance off.
Yeah. Yeah, that was I think the thing with that Mallard machine that I was noticing, the water movement, but like you're talking about the duck butt's actual movement in the water. Say that duck is close enough to see that, you know, that looks real compared to just a duck sitting there spraying and that butt's kind of sitting relatively in one spot.
Yeah, and while it's bouncing, the propeller is turning it. And so you have to hunt with it with a swivel on the bottom of it. But we overpainted the white portion of the underside of it bright white. And I've had a couple of people call me and say, well, that was too white. I dulled it down a little bit. So I said, well, okay, it's your decoy. You do what you want to with it. But we did that on purpose. So as it turns back and forth between the gray and the white, you know, it makes a noticeable difference there that should attract the duck's attention.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense to me. Where do you see, you know, the technology going with hunting and hunting decoys in the next few years with, you know, you brought out the Mallard machine, and that's kind of the invent of that was because we were able to get the lithium and the lighter batteries, and now we're going with the blade and the batteries are able to help us with that. But where do you see us going in the future?
Well, you know, the three rules of waterfowl hunting, I probably call it duck hunting, but three rules of waterfowl hunting are be where ducks want to be. That's like the X. You know, be hid. And if you can do them two things, you don't need anything else. Just stand there and shoot ducks. Yeah. All you got to do. And then make your decoy spread, you know, look live, look like real ducks. That's the three rules of waterfowl hunting. And all these devices that we have done thus far are basically either attracting ducks from a longer range than they can see static decoys, are making them think that static decoys are actually live ducks, because they see motion and they don't necessarily associate that motion with the decoy itself. You know, we proved that with our flopper flipper product that we bought out several years ago. And if you just scatter those through your decoy spread, then it makes the birds think that that's live decoys there to some extent. And so I think people will keep on making devices because, you know, the technology gets better. You know, Lord knows what AI is going to do to all this stuff. And so the goal would be for everybody to get your decoy spread to look closer like live ducks. And, you know, with the hunting pressure we have today, and you have it in California, we have it in the Mississippi Flyway, and it's probably the biggest factor in duck hunting today, in the weather. I don't know which one of them being both, but between the weather and the pressure, that's the two factors that either allows you or prevents you from decoying ducks. You know, you don't need a lot of decoys. Maybe in some places, you know, if you want real foot lake, you need a lot of decoys because everybody's trying to attract the same birds from up there. And it's a huge, huge, huge lake. But if you hunting kind of isolated things, you don't need that many decoys. So it wouldn't be, a far stretch to say that a person's decoys would all be motorized in some way or other. There wouldn't be static decoys in there. So I don't know, but it's just going to go to more lifelike. That's what everybody's trying to accomplish. Everybody that's making motorized duck decoys, motorized waterfowl decoys, they're trying to make it move like a real duck does and be more lifelike. So it'll keep going in that direction. Now, can we keep coming up with ideas to do that with? I don't know, you know, so.
And Terry, do you guys change the way you hunt or use the products? Like when you go to Argentina or some of these other countries where you're, you know, hunting waterfowl, is it primarily the same, you know, objective when you're hunting out here, or do you guys change up kind of what you're doing?
It's pretty much the same thing. No matter where you go, pretty much the same thing. And, you know, you have less pressured ducks there, so you can do some things a little different. You can be a little less careful in those places than you can do here. But, a duck's a duck, you know, most any place you go to. And we do about the same thing in Canada, Mexico, Argentina. I've duck hunted in Africa. Yeah, and I did the same thing there. We got invited to come down and help an outfitter learn how to hunt ducks and geese. He started a bird hunting operation, and he had lots of birds that were ground birds, dry ground birds. And he had a lot of ducks and geese, but he didn't know what to do with ducks and geese. So he invited us down. So we went down and helped him. So we did the same thing down there that we do here.
Is there a place that you prefer to hunt outside of your home state? Like where is your favorite place to go?
Where the ducks are. You know, that wasn't a valid statement 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, you know, but I don't know how they do it in California now, but ducks in the Mississippi and Central Flyway, you know, reverse migrate. They have reverse migrated for years, but not often. But now, you know, we get a big front comes across the thing, and we'll fill up with ducks like we did 10 years ago, you know. And in 4 or 5 days, those ducks are gone. And used to, they would never be gone. They might have been so pressured that you had a hard time decoying them, but that was just part of duck hunting. And then when you'd get a fresh bunch in, you know, the front bring a fresh bunch in, you know, you could decoy them again for a few days, and then they get hard to decoy. But now those ducks just leave in Louisiana. So Texas, Arkansas, and I'm convinced that they just going back up north because the seasons closed up there. And 10 years ago, the habitat wasn't suitable for them. But with the warmer temperatures now, you know, they don't have so much snow. The water's not all froze over. I think those ducks just learned to go up there because nobody's shooting at them. And they got good habitat up there. And a lot of crops still up there at that time. And, It's changed a whole lot down here. So when I say that, You know, we have outfitters that want us to come go hunting with them. And we used to just book a hunt in the duck season, you know. But now you just about got to wait and see where the ducks are, because they may have tons of ducks in, say, Oklahoma or Kansas and Nebraska. And we don't mm-hmm. have, we don't have them here and in Texas, but we hunt Louisiana, Texas, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Kansas, and Missouri, the states we hunt the most, Mississippi in there. That's the ones we've historically hunted the most. But the amount of time that we spend duck hunting up north is growing, and the time we spend duck hunting down south is diminishing.
Are a lot of hunters starting to go hunt north because the birds aren't staying down south? Are you seeing that a lot?
Well, I don't know if you term a lot of hunters do or not. You know, a lot of hunters just can't afford to do that.
Yeah.
You know? It's our business, so we can afford to do it. But a lot of hunters can't afford to do that. But yeah, there are a lot of people that do travel around. They're more on to doing what I was just saying, to locate the birds and see if you can go there.
Makes hunting a lot easier.
Yeah.
when you're going where the birds are and want to be. Yeah.
And if you want to be a real duck hunter, then you stay down here and see what you can do with these pressure ducks, and you'll become a real duck hunter.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah, I think we in California, I don't think, you know, people say, oh, reverse migration, which may happen or not happen for us sometimes. But I think our biggest fault over here is just we get that possible stale weather in like November, December, where you get a 70-degree spell and it's maybe high gray skies. And you've been out here. We have a lot of refuges with a lot of holding areas, and the ducks just sit. They got no reason to go feed. We don't get cold. So a lot of times we have the ducks. It's just they're not going anywhere.
Yeah. And no reason for them to move during the day.
And we have that too, because they basically found the same thing the ducks that are reverse migrating have found up. They had to go up north and get it. These ducks have found it here. I hunted a blind in Tennessee a few years ago, and this guy had flooded standing corn, and he had a blind, and right behind that blind 100 yards was a refuge. And we sat in that blind all day long from daylight to dark, and you could hear what sounded like thousands of mallards flashing around on that refuge, and we never fired shots. But at dark, those ducks came out and fed. So they had just learned, they've learned how to survive. You know, that's really what we need them to do, is to learn how to survive. And they've learned that. They've become nocturnal. Ducks could have been nocturnal from way back when. I don't know, but I never looked for them in the night before. But there was plenty of them in the daytime. But now, you know, we don't hunt my farm in the afternoon. And you can go down there some afternoon, it's full of ducks, full. And it's an ancestral duck hole, and it'll get a lot of ducks in it. You go back the next morning, ain't no ducks in that field. But they've left. They stay there during the night, and I used to see them stay there during the day and late in the afternoon, all pick up and fly off. And now they obviously are picking up right before daylight and flying off. So they just learn. It's a new world in the duck hunting. You got to think of it like that. You know, I got to do something different. You know.
Yeah. Well, no. Absolutely. I think a lot of people are kind of seeing that, and having birds in your area are going to make you sort of more successful, like, you know, safe haven areas, etc. But yeah, you're right, with the fly offs and how birds change their patterns. But a lot of it's just hunting pressure and weather and what they're wanting to do. But like Carson mentioned, we get in these weird long spells of the same weather over and over, and people are like, there's no ducks this season. It's like, there's lots of ducks. They're just literally leaving before you go out to the blind. You know, they're going back. And there's a lot of telemetry data and stuff on that, where it only takes a bird like, it's like 30 something hours to figure out where the safe areas are in a new area. So it's like, you know, when we talk about new birds, you know, they learn pretty quick.
Yeah, I think people put too much focus on the bird count that they publish, and if the bird count's down, they kind of discouraged. And there's plenty of birds, you know. In my life, I haven't seen a time when there wasn't plenty of birds. Now, there were some times back when, I don't remember when, back when the point system was in, where you could tell that there was less birds, but there were still plenty of birds to the hunt back then. But it's not a lack of birds. It's a lack of hunting techniques and what the birds have learned over the years. And so maybe you just got to go find them in a different place. And of course, down here in Louisiana, we got a lot of water just that people don't go to, just little potholes out in the woods and things like that. And like you say, those ducks learn how to find those places and stay in them. And then they learn how to sit on the water during the day when the hunters are out. And they've learned that we don't hunt in the afternoon, or they wouldn't be coming in our field in the afternoon.
Yeah, it's true.
So
yeah, no, absolutely.
Fortunately, they smart, and that's good for the ducks, which means it's good for us.
Is it strange being in an industry, where you're selling items, and we're talking about it right now, like a duck smart, a duck's going to figure out, call it the blade. In 5 years, every duck knows that blade is a bad thing, and then potentially like your product becomes obsolete in a sense, which obviously hasn't happened from the Mojo. Mojo's been around a long time, but it's got to be an interesting thing for you. It's like you come out with a new thing. It's like, oh, the ducks haven't seen this before, and then you're selling it, and then a lot of people have. And it's like now a lot more ducks have seen this thing, and it might not work as well.
Yeah. Well, and that's absolutely true. And we have all noticed that probably within the last 5 years, and you had a time when you started out, Carson, I don't remember what your number of years were, mm-hmm. where the focus has gone from the spinning wing to water motion. The big deal today is water motion. Okay. And that's because you're trying to show the duck something that you didn't show them, because, back when you just put your mojo out and ducks came. Okay. So you didn't have to worry about motion. We developed a lot of excellent products in our first, say, 10 years of doing this. It didn't sell. And I couldn't figure out why. And so I finally figured out why. So nobody needed them. The spinning wing decoy was all you needed back then. And so people wasn't going to buy this, that, and the other water motion decoys and stuff like that. But they will today. The duck hunter's focus is on water motion today. So I don't know where it goes from there. I think that was your question. And I don't know where it goes from there. We'll kind of have to figure that out as we go. And, maybe it gets to where we can't kill them, and then they get to where they come back easy. So
it's an interesting world that we live in and we pursue, chasing a bird that has a brain the size of a pea and can somehow figure out everything that we don't want it to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And ducks may be the worst of them all because they live long. I don't know what the average life of a duck is, because so many of them die of natural causes out in the wild, and so many of them get killed. But, a mallard hen, 20, 25 years they can live. So mallard hens get smart, and they tell me that ducks tend to follow those aged hens around. So they don't have to all be smart. They just got to follow the smart ones.
Dodge a few stray shots every here and now and then and be safe.
Yeah. If you find an old mallard drake out there by himself, you can usually kill him if he's just by himself.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Can you tell us of a hunt that you've ever been on where it's like a revelation of like your first time using the mojo or first time using a new project where you're like, wow, this is it. This is going to be the ticket.
Well, obviously when we came out with a mojo mallard, that was the case as far as a new product goes. We were killing a limit of ducks pretty much every day on our farm. And that's where I hunted with the Mojo Mallard first. And it was taking us to 9:30 or 10. We'd probably have a limit. And after we got the Mojo Mallard, 7:30 in the morning. So, it was a huge change. I think you asked me for a new product doing that or new use of a product doing that. So, I've seen some instances where the Mojo product made a difference. Without it, we wouldn't have been successful. I've seen some of those. But as far as a new product goes, it'd have to be the spinning wing decoy.
Yeah. I think everyone probably remembers when they first came out, and I met some guys that were using them, and knew they weren't the greatest hunters. And they're like, yeah, coming back with straps of ducks. And we're like, what is going on here? You know, like, oh, just put it in the pond and turn it on and just ducks appear essentially, right? And then finally we were broke down. I think for Christmas we got one and we used it the first time and we're like, oh my gosh. You know, it just like changed, right? So,
and that aspect of it was both good and bad because mm-hmm. it would let people kill ducks that were not probably capable of killing them otherwise. But that has a good side of that coin too. You know, it helped a lot of young people, kids, high school kids, college kids. Well, I know that around here where I live, you know, be successful. And when they probably wouldn't have been or as successful if it didn't have that device. And that kept them in the duck hunting world, you know. And the biggest problem we got is the lack of hunters, you know. It don't mm-hmm. seem like that with all the pressure in the duck, but, you know, the duck hunters in general are down 5% of the population. And so, you know, pretty soon we become irrelevant. In fact, we would be irrelevant today if we didn't spend so much money. So, you know, our spending is the only thing that holds up there. We don't have enough numbers for the politicians to worry about us. We don't have that, but we spend enough money that they do. And so, you know, when the duck hunters are our waterfowl hunters, people buying a duck stamp are down below 1%. So, you know, we need people to be successful, and those things kept some people be successful, and that kept them in the sport when they probably would not have stayed in it. If you didn't grow up in it, then, you know, you go out there about 2 or 3 times, get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, go out in the cold rain, you know, it don't necessarily appeal to everybody. And, for those of us that have it in their genes, you know, it's wonderful. We love it, you know, but the population's all moving to big cities, you know, and those kids are introduced to all kinds of other entertainment now. So, you know, we'll keep losing hunters if we don't help them be successful.
Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, you hit the point where, you know, waterfowl hunting, it's kind of one of those things too. You know, the success is huge. If you're really into it and you're not successful, you're probably going to give it up. But like, you go duck hunting on your first time, it's like, you either just are immersed with it or you go out one time and you're kind of like, oh yeah, that's not for me. At least like a lot of the people that we've mentored, you know, they might be on a great property and have a phenomenal hunt, birds all over the place. And you're like, hey, do you want to keep shooting? You're like, no, I shot a duck. I'm good. And there's just birds piling in. And you're like, you have no idea like how epic this day is. But, it is funny like that. But, you know, like my son, 100% into it. He's young. He like wants to go duck hunting all the time. And then there's, you know, some kids, it's like, yeah, went out once. It was cold. I'm good. You know, and it's just kind of is what it is.
Well, you need to have some kind of way where they can watch those mallards float into the decoys. You don't have to see that, but about 2 or 3 times. And if you're not hooked, you're not my kind of person. You're some other kind of person.
Absolutely. Just you hearing the wings and seeing it. Yeah, I was like that as a kid, but yeah, absolutely.
So. Or watch those green winged teal come in. You have green winged teal in California? I know you have cinnamon teal. Yeah, I thought you did. Yeah, I know you have cinnamon teal. We don't have them, so I'm jealous of y'all having them. And, but you know, when them teal getting them big balls and come whistling in, man. You know that'll do it to you too.
That's the best, I think, when they're in big balls like that and come right in. Yeah, little missiles. But yeah, Terry, just want to say, you know, thank you for one, supporting California waterfowl, two, for coming on to the podcast, and it's just always a pleasure to catch up, and you're just kind of a wealth of knowledge, and thank you for what you guys are doing out there. Obviously we love your products, hunt with them. So, you know, thank you for everything that you're doing for the waterfowl community. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you for what you do. I say this often, but you know, given all the factors that affect wildlife in general, in hunter's life in general, you know, we have to have conservation organizations, you know, everybody could be interested in it, but everybody don't have the time and the resources and whatever to go out and do something about it. And y'all do something about it. And, you know, you're one of the better conservation organizations in North America. So I say thank you to you.
Well, we appreciate that. And thanks again so much for taking some time and talking with us today.
Glad to do it. If I can help, let me know.
Awesome. Thanks, Terry.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Save It for the Blind podcast. You can find our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.